In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
You're listening to a Frequency Podcast Network production.
Do you enjoy not getting infected with once eradicated diseases? Well, I've got some bad news for you about that.
The World Health Organization, as well as the U.S. Center for Disease Control, have issued warnings about the resurgence of measles in Europe and the States. So the question is, should Canadians be concerned?
Measles, a highly contagious and potentially dangerous illness, may be spreading in parts of Canada. Tonight, Quebec health officials are warning we could be seeing the start of community transmission.
Public health officials in York Region are investigating the fourth confirmed case of measles in Ontario since the start of the year, but this is the first time the source of the infection is unknown.
Yes, measles is kind of, sort of, back. You can probably guess why and how. So the questions today are practical. Should you be worried about yourself or your children? Why have vaccination rates for measles fallen so low? How do we get them back up? When do the rates of cases we're seeing go from concerning to scary? And what do you need to know about this disease now that you probably didn't need to know when measles weren't back? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is the big story, measles. Dr. Raywat Deenandan is an epidemiologist and an associate professor at the University of Ottawa's Faculty of Health Sciences. He is the person we turn to when dormant diseases reemerge to bother us again.
Yeah, interesting times we live in.
So then I will just start by asking you to please give us measles 101. What do the medical textbooks say about this disease?
Measles is a very contagious airborne disease, possibly the most contagious one that we know about on a regular basis. It's airborne, as I mentioned, caused by a virus, a very high reproduction number. If you remember what you learned during COVID, the reproduction number is the average number of people that an infected person will go on to infect, and that can be somewhere between 12 and 18, which is pretty high. So if someone around you has measles and you're not immune, you're probably going to get measles. It's pretty hard to avoid. It gives you, you know, cold and flu symptoms in addition to this rash that I think we're all familiar with, resembles dengue fever and scarlet fever as well. For some reason, we don't fear measles now as much as we probably should. And that reason, of course, is that we're mostly immune to it. But it has a pretty high death rate in places where the healthcare system is not great. So in rich countries, if you get measles, you've got a 0.1% chance of dying. In poorer countries, that number goes up to 15%.
Wow.
But we're mostly concerned about the complications that come with it. And that can be anything from pneumonia to blindness and encephalitis, which is brain inflammation. So we do consider it a mild disease because it doesn't cause death as commonly as it used to, at least, you know, in wealthy countries, but it's nothing to be shrugged off. It's a serious consideration. It can cause disability and all kinds of suffering.
As most of us are immune to it, we don't think about it that much. That hasn't always been the case historically. How bad has measles been, even in rich countries? Just give us a sense maybe of what it used to be like.
I mean, I can take you back to the 16th century when it first went global due to the age of exploration. And after that, it was a killer, frankly. So right now, we see about a dozen cases in Canada per year. for a lot of reasons. And sometimes that goes up to maybe a couple hundred cases in really bad years. Prior to widespread vaccination, like 1950s, we were seeing 50,000 cases a year. Hmm. And before that, 90,000 to 100,000 cases per year. And that's when our population was much smaller. So the anti-vaxxers are fond of pointing out that the CFR, the death rate due to measles, was falling rapidly well before vaccines came on the picture. And that's because we had improvements in nutrition, in healthcare, and we had antibiotics for treating the pneumonia caused by measles. But we still had this 1 in 1,000 death rate that lingered with us. So it used to infect a lot more people. But vaccination has made it, again, not something we think about much.
I think in order to discuss what's happening with measles now, we obviously have to focus on the vaccine. Maybe just give us a brief, if you could, history of when did we develop the measles vaccine? What kind of place in medical history does that hold?
The one we deal with now was developed in 1963. And it's a live attenuated vaccine, meaning the virus is alive when it's injected into you, but they've weakened it chemically so it can't infect you. And nowadays, it's packaged with mumps and rubella into something we call the MMR vaccine. Mm-hmm. And one dose of MMR became routinely available in Canada in the early 70s, and two doses became the standard in the 90s. But what place in medical history? Well, the MMR vaccine probably heralded the age of what I would call routine vaccination, which is probably why it's so hated by anti-vaxxers and so targeted by the pseudoscience merchants.
Right.
And I think it represents a moment when public health decided to really focus on the so-called mild and moderate diseases. Because by 1970s, measles was not the killer it used to be. So it was considered mild. And people can debate whether or not it's mild. That's a category that some people use. It wasn't smallpox, what I'm trying to say. It wasn't the killer the smallpox was. Mm-hmm. So by focusing on that, suddenly we made a decision that public health is trying to reduce suffering, not just death. And an important consideration is that widespread vaccination of this nature erased a lot of social disparities. For example, prior to vaccination, who were the people most likely to get measles? Mostly poor people, mostly, you know, racialized people, for a lot of reasons. They're the ones living in certain conditions, less likely to access good quality care, et cetera. And so vaccination became the great social leveler. Now, it doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is, you can be immune also. So that, to me, is the great historical impact of this kind of vaccine.
The hesitancy around this vaccine, in particular the MMR vaccine, predates the pandemic, and we can talk about how the pandemic impacted it in a moment, but where did the anti-MMR vaccine hesitancy come from? As you mentioned, you know, this is a routine vaccination. It's not the sort of next generation vaccine that we talk about when we talk about the COVID vaccines. Why this one?
Yeah. Vaccine hesitancy goes back a long way, back to, you know, Edward Jenner in the 18th century, the first smallpox vaccine. The polio vaccine, people resisted that too. Every version of the flu vaccine, there is a resistance contingent. But the big moment of MMR hesitancy came with the famous Andrew Wakefield paper in the 90s. And if people don't know, Andrew Wakefield supposedly showed a connection between MMR and autism. And
right.
In fact, even today, when you ask people why they don't want their kid vaccinated, almost all of them say autism.
Right.
The problem there is that the paper, many people consider to be fraudulent. It was retracted. It was very unscientific. Some very biased interpretations of the data, ethical breaches. And some people say the data was faked as well.
So not great.
Yeah, exactly. Subsequent analyses have shown repeatedly that there is no connection between MMR and autism. But that message is out there, and it's deeply, deeply embedded into the social psyche. I encounter it on a daily basis when people talk to me about vaccine hesitancy. That is their major concern. So that's where it comes from. It comes from that one paper that's been amplified by disinformation merchants. I won't name some of the famous ones, but we know who they are, mm-hmm. who are well-funded and keep on repeating this regularly debunked connection.
Speaking of amplified, we've talked about this in the past. I've talked about it with other epidemiologists like Dr. David Fisman. When the pandemic hit and COVID vaccines became available, hesitancy on all vaccines spiked. Do we have Any idea right now sort of what the hesitancy rate for the MMR vaccine is and where it's been trending, I guess?
Good question. I haven't got any data to suggest that or to answer that question directly at the moment. Definitely, there are signs that hesitancy is increasing. And in Ontario right now, we have coverage rates of around 50%, 52%. That used to be as high as 90% a few years ago.
Wow.
For MMR. Yeah, and there are pockets of this country where it's below 50%. And you need 95% to maintain elimination status, by the way. And if you do some digging, some qualitative studies have shown that it's fear of the vaccine. It's not, I haven't got enough time to get my kid vaccinated or I didn't know about it. It's literal fear of it. And that's been driven by this paranoia around vaccines. Now, we who talk about this maybe have not done a good enough job in addressing the specific fears that people have in showing the data and convincing them that it is more or less safe. And I say more or less because nothing is perfectly safe.
Right.
Everything has some risk associated with it. So we have to teach people better how to weigh risk and reward and to compare the risk of the vaccine, which is minuscule but real, versus the risk of a disease, which is considerable and terrifying.
In the past, with vaccine rates much higher, that was a different risk-reward proposition, right? Because there wasn't as much measles around, simply, even for unvaccinated people.
I see what you're saying. Yes and no, because we have, at a global level, we have elimination status in most of the developed world, so-called developed world, but we have measles being quite endemic in places in Africa and Asia and the Middle East. For example, the top three countries with measles right now is Kazakhstan, Azerbaijan, and Yemen. And there's always been a risk of travelers bringing back measles into our population, our supposedly immune population, and causing outbreaks that would take hold in an under-vaccinated population. It's just that now, because of the increased susceptibility due to poor vaccine coverage, we have a higher risk of explosive growth in some communities. That's the fear.
So when I said off the top that we're doing this because another disease has returned from the dead, when we say measles is back, specifically in Canada right now, I guess, what does back mean? You know, you mentioned we used to have a few cases, maybe to a couple of hundred. What are we seeing now?
Right now, we're seeing more cases this year than we saw all of last year. Now, to some people, that's not a big deal. Maybe it'll peter off.
Okay.
But it is likely that these few cases will take hold in these increasingly common pockets of under-vaccinated populations and explode therein. The good news, though, is that we know exactly what to do. We have a solution staring at us in the face, and that is, of course, just catch up everybody on their vaccinations and create immunity that way. And this thing stops right away. So that's why I'm not overly concerned. I'm moderately concerned because a threat is looking at us, but I'm not because we have a solution.
Right.
An affordable, effective, safe, known, tolerated, available vaccine that we know exactly how to give that is fantastic for children and fantastic for older people. Just a matter of getting into the right arms.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
When we talk about the COVID vaccines, we often talk about, you know, they protect you extremely well from serious disease and death. They definitely don't protect you fully from infections, and we talk about breakthrough infections. What are those rates like for MMR? Do you need to worry if you've had the vaccine that you still might get a mild case of it, or is this like a solid wall?
Historically, about 10% of measles cases are among vaccinated people. And that hasn't been a problem in the past because there are so few cases that for those for whom the vaccine doesn't work, you're less likely to be exposed to it. So there are two kinds of vaccine failure. There's primary failure, in which no immune response was ever initiated by the injection. And that's maybe 5% of people, which sounds like a high number, kind of is. The secondary vaccine failure, which is when immunity wanes.
Right.
That's mostly what we see with the COVID vaccine. So a couple of years later, you haven't got the same amount of sterilizing immunity that you had before. That's maybe 2 to 10% of people who get the MMR vaccine. So that's why we rely on herd immunity. If everybody else is vaccinated, then those 5% who had no immune response whatsoever never have to worry because they're never going to be exposed. That's the beauty of herd immunity. And herd immunity, the threshold for it is different for every disease and every vaccine. So for the combination of measles and MMR, that threshold is about 95%. We need 95% of the population to be immunized in order to prevent the disease from penetrating into our population. And that's how we get elimination status. And we've had something like elimination status in Canada for some time. It is threatened right now.
I'm glad to hear that you're mildly concerned, but not hugely concerned, just by the rates that we are seeing at this point. As you mentioned, though, vaccine hesitancy is rising and the rates for the MMR vaccine have been dropping. At what point, and I'm not trying to fearmonger here or anything, but I mean, I've learned my lesson from COVID, which is that like everything is okay and cases are really low until they're not, right?
At what point do we panic? The question.
I mean, you don't have to use the word panic, but what point does it switch from like, yeah, this is not great to see, but it's manageable, to oh shit?
We're not going to get to oh shit, I don't think, because we have so much existing immunity from the previous generations that got immunized.
Mm.
It's just if this trend continues for another generation, then we might be into oh shit territory. The ocean concern really is in the hospital capacity.
Right.
As I mentioned, the threat of death is small, but not zero, maybe 0.1% for wealthy countries. The threat of hospitalization is quite high. 15% or so of people who get measles will end up hospitalized. Of course, that varies between demographically. So that presents a significant challenge to our healthcare system if this is allowed to become more endemic than it was before, in addition to the suffering caused by their disability, whether short-term or long-term. So it's not good, whatever the outcome is, it's not good. But I don't think we'll get to the people pulling out their hair, running down the streets, panicking stage. It's just that this is just one more thing we got to worry about that we don't need to worry about.
Right. In terms of the vaccine, I know the rules around COVID vaccines have been different because they are a new vaccine and because it is generally an opt-in system. What are the rules around the MMR vaccine and kids getting their shots to go to school? Because I remember going to school as a kid and I had to show my vaccination card. We had that little yellow book. Is that still happening? And if it is, why are rates so low?
Well, in Ontario, I believe we are subject to the Immunization Act. And there is a requirement that in Ontario, you need 2 doses of MMR to attend school. That's same in places like New Brunswick as well. I think Manitoba requires just the measles vaccine, not just mumps and rubella. Again, it varies by province. But there are accommodations for people who want exceptions. And this is where the lawyers get involved. I'm not sure exactly how vociferously you have to argue to get an exception.
I mean, if you're talking rates a little over 50%, it seems like we're being pretty accommodating.
Yeah, exactly, right? So I'm not sure how that is being allowed to happen, quite honestly. How much legal leverage public health actually has to enforce these requirements. That's a legal question.
We're seeing these rates drop. It is such an easy way to prevent this disease. And a lot of the hesitancy has been increased by fear of the COVID vaccines. How do you make that argument or even just that kind explanation that you were talking about earlier to draw the distinction between the two kinds of vaccines and ease the fears that are somehow still lingering from this one totally fake study 25 years ago?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And there are several ways to approach it. There's the broad blanketing attempt to educate the public on the science of vaccinology, how the COVID vaccines are, for the most part, mRNA vaccines that do this and that. Ironically, people are more afraid of an mRNA vaccine, which contains a fragment of a molecule from a virus, than they are of the actual living virus, which is what MMR actually is, right? Which is bizarre to me. So, a full court press on updating everyone's understanding of basic science is required. That will obviously take a long time. Short of that, what I would like to do is, if genuinely well-meaning people have questions and hesitancies about this vaccine, just ask. I'm happy to answer a question. And I would ask back, why are you vaccine hesitant? And go from there. If they're genuinely open to discussing risk and reward, then we can certainly have that conversation. It's an easy one. Right? The bottom line is, nothing is without risk. When we say the MMR vaccine is extremely safe, we don't mean it's perfectly safe. We just mean that the fraction of people having a bad reaction, like a seizure, for example, will be very, very small.
Right.
Now, if you're one of those people, it's a big deal to you. Let's not minimize that. One out of a million MMR doses will get encephalitis from the vaccine. That's not a small thing. Mm-hmm. But that's compared to 1 out of 1,000 people who will get encephalitis from measles itself. And you have a very high chance of getting measles if you don't get vaccinated. So that's the math that has to be explained to people. The risk of the vaccine is minuscule, trivial compared to the risk of the disease. Why should you subject your child to that risk? Because the risk of getting the disease is so much greater. Again, 0.1% to 15% chance of death, 20% chance of hospitalization, 5% chance of pneumonia. These are not trivial numbers. So these days, it's looking like if you don't get the vaccine, you've got a very high chance of getting the disease if, in fact, it comes back the way that we are afraid it'll come back. The vaccine is your best bet to keep your kid out of the hospital and, frankly, out of the morgue.
It is very kind of you to offer to explain this to anybody that asks and has questions. It's obviously lovely of you to continue coming on this podcast to explain these kind of things. But you are only one person. Have we had that kind of communication from public health or the government on this? And do we need more?
Oh, yes, we need more. Public health is really overworked. They've got so much to deal with, understaffed, under-resourced. They're under attack by everybody all the time. So I'm sympathetic to public health workers. Mm-hmm. What they need to do, frankly, is just issue a lot more social media and public awareness messages. Like, this is measles. This is why it went away. This is why it's coming back. And this is this fantastic tool that we have to prevent it again. And this is why we know it's safe. And this is the risk associated with it. Just lay it on the line for people. We're at the stage now where nobody wants to be managed.
Yeah.
They are skeptical of well-tailored, manicured messages that may be concealing some hidden truth. So you be transparent about risk and transparent about reward. That's the only way we win back public trust, is complete transparency.
As I mentioned, there are a lot of stories out there right now about this case not linked to travel and another case perhaps linked to the community and that kind of stuff. And I'm seeing this online. If I am a parent and my child is up to date on their MMR vaccinations, do I need to worry about all of this?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. And my answer is, I would not lose sleep over it, but we should worry not for our children, but for our communities.
Right.
And this is the struggle we've had throughout COVID, is distinguishing between individual risk and population risk. And of course, we all retreat to individual risk. What does it mean for me and my family? But we have to manage this at a population level. If your kid has had their 2 doses of MMR, they probably have close to 100%, probably close to lifetime protection, probably. Mm-hmm. But remember, maybe 5% have no response at all. And you don't know if you're one of those 5% until you're exposed.
Right.
So what you got to worry about is making sure that your child does not get exposed by making sure everybody else gets vaccinated. So again, don't lose sleep over it. Just continue to advocate for full vaccine uptake. That's the best way to ensure that in the off chance your child is a non-responder, they are still protected.
Dr. Jeyanandhan, thank you as always for explaining this to me and everyone else. And hopefully this is some of that good old-fashioned health communication that we need. So much appreciated.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dr. Raywat Jeyanandhan of the University of Ottawa. That was The Big Story, the latest episode in an ongoing series of diseases I thought I'd never have to do a podcast episode about. Stay tuned for the next one. If you've got feedback or a suggestion for a topic we should do, maybe a different infectious disease, you can send it to us via email. The address is hello@thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can call us and leave a voicemail. That number is 416-935-5935. The Big Story is available in every podcast player, whether the topic is happy or depressing or somewhere in between. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play it for you by saying, "Play the Big Story podcast." Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.
In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a 6-part podcast from CBC. Available now.